Our next speaker is Jyoti Jorege Jehu. Many of us know her because she's been involved with 50 Years is Enough Network for over 4 years. And she became its director in October 98. Working with over 185 international partner organizations in more than 65 countries, the U.S. Network for Global Economic Justice is a project of 50 Years is Enough, which is comprised of over 205 U.S. grassroots women, solidarity, faith-based, policy, social and economic justice, youth, labor, whichever group you can think of. It's all in there. Jyoti grew up as an active member in the Green Belt movement in her native Kenya. She has testified before the U.S. Congress. She has made multiple presentations on these issues at the U.N. And many of us have seen those mobilizations that are taking place outside. We're going to be kicking their ass, and she's one of the key organizers around that. So Jyoti, give her a big hand.
Thank you. I don't know if you're allowed to say ass in church, but good morning. I'm very excited to be here this morning. I just came from a briefing that our colleagues from the Global South made to the media. If you recall, after Seattle, there was a report from The Economist saying the real losers of Seattle were the developing countries. In the struggle against the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund, activists in the United States have always taken the lead from the people at the grassroots, from the people in the Global South, who live and often die from the impacts of the policies of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. This week, today, and for the rest of our lives, we are making a commitment to ensure that these institutions change. I think I would like to tell you that the consensus this morning was that they cannot be reformed, that they have to be abolished. So on Tuesday, when the steering committee of the 50 Years is Enough Network meets, we will have to discuss this because our colleagues have spoken very, very clearly. The oppression is global. Therefore, the resistance and the solidarity has to be global. We have made the connections across sectors, across countries, across regions, across states, across communities. And now, people to people, we are making those connections. It is not workers in the maquiladoras who are the enemies of workers who are losing their jobs in the U.S. The enemy is the multinational corporations, the corporations that are taking away those jobs and ensuring that they give them or they provide those jobs for people in Mexico, in Haiti, in Nicaragua at cents an hour, $2 a day or the rest, or the like. The enemy is not fellow workers around the world. The enemy are the owners of capital, and we need to remember that. In getting ready for the mobilization for global justice, I've been very, very impressed. I've been inspired by the commitment, by the skills and the talents of activists who have spent hours, weeks, days getting ready for this. And I'm really pleased that all of you are here today. Unlike Herman, I don't mind demonizing the World Bank and the IMF. I don't mind at all. And I want to do this so that, you know, I don't know how many people saw the Washington Post yesterday. The workers at the World Bank and the IMF saying, why us? We work so hard. We care so much about poverty. What is wrong with these people? Well, we have spent days in this week. We have spent months and years before this saying why these institutions are wrong, saying what is wrong with international debt, what is wrong with structural adjustment programs, what is wrong with their support of corrupt dictators, what is wrong with their top-down mentality and development model, what is wrong with the economic model that they are pushing forward. We will continue to name the reasons why we are pointing a finger, and my only hope is that their nice salaries ease their pain and help them cope with the accusations, help them cope with the fact that they have caused misery. The best indictment does not come from us. Davidson Buto, who worked 12 years at the IMF, he talked about the blood that covered his hands. He talked about what he had done in the name of the job that he was doing. He said enough was enough. We have taken up the mantle. We are continuing with that demand and saying enough is enough. These institutions cannot be reformed. These institutions are not alleviating poverty. In fact, they have been increasing poverty. Something has to change. Over the next few days, not just in Washington, but in Haiti, in Turkey, in Argentina, New Zealand, Mauritius, the Philippines, in many, many communities and many countries, people are also doing things similar to what we are doing here. It is not the Washington consensus. This is not the Washington consensus. It is the people's consensus. These institutions have to change. These institutions have to adapt. These institutions have to listen. Otherwise, they are out, and we will send our tax dollars some other place to some other institution that does the will of the people, that ensures that the weakest, the poorest, the environment, working people, women, children are protected. They do not become mere pawns in a global economy that transfers wealth from poor countries and poor people to multinational corporations. Scholar activist Howard Zinn asks the question, what a difference would it make in our lives if instead of every day hearing about how the Dow Jones Industrial Average did, we every day heard about the 34,000 children who die from preventable and curable diseases. They die because they don't have access to clean water, because they don't have access to immunization. So instead of every newscast talking about the Dow Jones up, down, just about the same today, 34,000 children died today from preventable and curable diseases. It is genocide. Over 12 million children die every year. I don't know how many of us know this. I don't know how many of us reflect on these kinds of thoughts as we think about why we are out in the streets, why we are spending long hours working, why we are taking a week of vacation or taking time out of our lives to be here. Fighting for justice is not a choice. It's the moral imperative. I want to talk about 3 points about what the World Bank and the IMF are up to and then conclude. Structural adjustment programs. They ask why the finger is being pointed at them. Under structural adjustment program for over 20 years now, in about 90 countries, we have seen the health sector, the education sector, nutrition programs, credit for farmers, the productive and reproductive capacities of women completely decimated. And I, for one, choose to lay all of that on the front step of the World Bank and the IMF. They are responsible for that. And we have to say that. They say, how can you blame this on us? They are responsible for it. They say that they follow the guidance and the directive of the governments, of their members who are governments. They are public institutions. Their members may be governments, but it is your tax dollars and mine that are paying for those. Under structural adjustment programs, We who live in the United States and other enriched countries are benefiting from the system. We are able to get cheap goods across about a block and a half from here at the Safeway. I'm able to get Costa Rican bananas for 69 cents a pound. I grew up on a farm. I know what it takes to raise crops like bananas. And I'm very, very much aware that that pound of bananas costing me 69 cents means that somebody has been massively exploited. And therefore, with that realization comes a responsibility and an obligation for us to say, no, this has to stop. How many people in this room know the name of their representative at the World Bank or at the IMF? Show of hands. The name of your representative at the World Bank or the IMF? Yes, you do. Show of hands. I want to see this. This is appalling. I want all of us to leave here and do the research and find out. It doesn't matter what country you're from. You do have one. You do have a representative. You do have a representative at the World Bank, an executive director representing the U.S. At the IMF, an executive director representing the United States. And so, if nothing else, on Tuesday morning, by Tuesday morning, this is your assignment. I used to be a teacher and you give deadlines. By Tuesday morning, every one of you should have gotten on the World Bank website, www.worldbank.org, on the IMF website, www.imf.org, and you know the name of your representative at those institutions, you know their address, their email, their phone and fax number. And by a week from Tuesday, you will have sent a message, I don't care how, to them, telling them why you came to Washington and what you want them to do. Do we have agreement on this? Thank you. Thank you. I went to a meeting at the IMF about a month and a half ago, and the head of the PR department said he doesn't hear enough from people around the world. Well, I told him that he was going to be sorry. Please don't make a liar out of me. I want to very quickly talk about international debt. There's a fantastic movement called the Jubilee 2000 Movement. In over 50 countries, there are national campaigns. In over 100 countries, over 17 million people have signed petitions demanding debt cancellation. So we know that the people want this. People want debt cancellation. Mr. Wolfenson would have us believe that he, as he has said, quote, we invented the notion of debt relief. I beg to differ. At a forum where I was in Ann Arbor, Michigan, a few weeks ago, the guy who is head of the HIPC initiative, the Heavily Indebted Poor Countries Initiative of the World Bank and the IMF, said that there were, I know he was speaking metaphorically, but you know he should do better than that. He said that there were 12 people, he thinks there are 12 people in the entire world who are interested in debt. I said, well, I know it was a metaphor, but you're very wrong. 17 million people signed the petition. The initiative that the World Bank and the IMF have put forward still links debt relief to structural adjustment programs. The people of the Global South have said it is a poison chalice and they are not going to take a sip from it. Your job, my job, is to make sure that the United States Congress, the U.S. Treasury, the representative at the World Bank and the IMF understand this. Debt relief linked to structural adjustment program is a poison chalice, and the people of the South will have none of it. The South African Council of Churches in Cologne, when the G7 announced a new debt relief, the son of HIPC, daughter of HIPC, I don't know, you know, HIPC 2, the South African Council of Churches said that the new HIPC initiative merely polishes rather than breaks the chains of debt. We want to break the chains of debt. Let's be very clear about that. The Banking Committee last year voted to delink structural adjustment programs from debt relief. it has been swallowed up in the way that Congress swallows up the will of the people. We have to remind them. And the last point that I want to make is this. On April 16th, we will be out on their lips. We will be outside on the doors of the World Bank and the IMF. The IMF has to understand that the concerns that people have expressed about structural adjustment programs, about the treadmill that the HIPC initiative is, are serious concerns. We have total resolve of ensuring that the injustice does not continue. We have total resolve of ensuring that these institutions are held accountable. And I very, very quickly want to say, you know, the media is asking, why are you here? What is this about? I want very quickly to read to you the demands of the 50 Years is Enough Network to these institutions. On the occasion of these meetings, they have been signed on by hundreds of people and organizations around the world. It is important that they know what we are demanding. Some of my other colleagues will be talking about the alternatives that we are putting forward to replace what the World Bank and the IMF offers us. And so my job here in closing is to tell you what we are demanding. If you want to sign on to this, I encourage you to do that. One, that the IMF and World Bank cancel all the debts owed to them. I want to hear your applause if you agree, by the way. Thank you. That the IMF and World Bank immediately cease imposing the economic austerity measures known as structural adjustment programs. That the IMF and World Bank accept responsibility for the disastrous impact of structural adjustment policies by paying reparations to the people and communities who have borne that impact. That the World Bank Group pay reparations to people relocated and otherwise harmed by its large projects, such as dams, and compensate governments for repayments made on projects which World Bank evaluations rank as economic failures. That the World Bank Group immediately cease providing advice and resources through its division devoted to private sector investment to advance the goals associated with corporate globalization. The next one is an important one, and I really want to know what people think. I know I'm out of time. That the agencies and individuals within the World Bank Group and IMF complicit in abetting corruption as well as their accomplices in borrowing countries be prosecuted, and that those responsible, including the institutions involved, provide compensation for resources stolen and damage done. And lastly, that the future existence, structure, and policies of international institutions such as the World Bank Group and the IMF be determined through a democratic, participatory, and transparent process. Somebody from the World Bank asked, I'm surprised, he said, it doesn't say anything about public flogging of World Bank and IMF policies. It's in the fine print. Thank you.